let's start with our motivation. So we, in that long room, have been talking about death and impermanence. And we said last week that all the people who, every day that there is, the people who are going to die that day wake up in the morning thinking they're not going to die. Even people who are terminally ill. Death won't happen today. And so it was with the people in France in the terrorist attack today. They all woke up with their plans for Friday evening to have a good time with their friends and family. And some of them are now in the process of going to their next lives. So it was not expected. But when the karma ripens, then there's no real choice. So for that reason, it's important that we use our time wisely. And instead of using it to cultivate grudges and arrogance and various mental defilements, to really use our time to generate compassion, to cultivate wisdom, so that we can make our life one that is of benefit to others, so that when we do die, we feel comfortable and pleased with our life, or without fear, without regret, and we feel like we had a life worth living because we offered something meaningful to other living beings. So with that intention to have a meaningful life through transforming our mind, then let's listen to the teachings this evening. Okay. So, we finished the 9-point death meditation last time. And then there's another meditation on death that is very helpful to do. And that is one of imagining our own death. And so starting with, I mean, you can imagine it in many different ways, yeah. You could be a person at a stadium or a concert, you know, when the terrorists enter, and imagine dying like that, and what would you think and feel, and how would you work with your mind? Or you could imagine, you know, going to the doctor's office because, you know, not feeling well, and then the doctor giving you a terminal diagnosis. And then, how do I feel about this? You know, really going into it. Who do I want to tell? Who don't I want to tell? What do I want to do during the time I have left? Considering also that the prognosis is uncertain. It could be faster, it could go slower. And doing like this, you know, where you have some time to prepare, then it really you know, makes you think, well, who do I need to apologize to and who do I need to forgive? Yeah, because those are two things that we want to make sure we do before we die. And so this may make it more vivid to us who those people are and what those incidents are that we want to either forgive and apologize or apologize for. And then to go about doing that now, not assuming that we'll have time right before we die to do it, but kind of cleaning up everything now. And then also thinking about making your directives, which it's good to do now anyway. You know, so who you want to be, have the power of healthcare attorney, You know, what is your Dharma will? What kind of practices do you want done when you're dying? Do you want CPR? Do you want, you know, if you're brain dead, what do you want done? What do you want done with the body? You know, what do you want done with your possessions? Yeah. And then thinking of all the stuff you have and other people going through all of the stuff you have. What do you think about that? Yeah, all the stuff you've been hoarding, all the stuff that maybe you really don't want people to know that you have, but you die very quickly and then they're going to go through your stuff and like, oh, Dad had this, or Mom had this sex toy. You know? You never know what you're going to find. You never know. Yeah. And so thinking, you know, what do I have here that people are going to look at and read and so on. And, you know, how do we want to distribute our belongings? Who do we want to be the executor of the will? Practice generosity now by making these plans so that when the time of death comes, we don't have to be thinking about our possessions and figuring out what we want to do with them and so on. Yeah. In that light, we got an email just last week from a woman in Mexico who was saying that she has two adult children, but they seem to reject her and distance themselves from her. And she, you know, wanted to leave her possessions to them, but it didn't feel quite right. And then she was listening to some Dharma teachings. Sopa Rinpoche was in Mexico not too long ago. And she realized that, you know, Dharma is the most important thing. And so she decided to remake her will and give her resources to Dharma institutions, you know, in order to create merit, in order to support the Dharma so other people can meet the Dharma. And so she wrote that to me, and I was just like, wow, this person has such a really generous, beautiful heart and intention, you know? And she's going and making the arrangements now, clearing it all up, and, you know, then when she dies, she can die knowing that she's creating a lot of merit through generosity, and know that her things are going to be used in the way that she wants them to be used. They won't be used in a way that she doesn't agree with. Okay, so really, you know, thinking if you had a terminal diagnosis, well, you know, how do you want to arrange all these things? And who do you want to talk to? What do you want to do? Yeah. Do you have a bucket list, like you want to go, you know, on a cruise to Alaska? Or maybe you want to go, I don't know, you know, on a cruise around the, you know, near Antarctica, or, you know, go to Disneyland, or, you know, what is your bucket list? And are those things on your bucket list really worthwhile? Yeah? So you have your list, you know, I've always wanted to go to Disneyland, and I want to do that before I die. And then thinking, okay, I go to Disneyland and I die, and so what? Yeah? Or I go to the Caribbean on a cruise, and then I die, and again, so what? So to really think of, you know, how, what we would want to do with the time that we have remaining, and how we think it's better to prepare for our own death. Yeah. And so I think the more we think about these kinds of things, then the better prepared we are. And so then when the time comes, we don't freak out and go into crisis, you know, because we've thought about it before when our mind is calmer, when we're clearer and we have some plan. Yeah? And so what if you, you know, die where there's some slow process, what do you want to be meditating on? Yeah? Do you know the practice from the thought training texts of the five powers during life and the five powers during death? Or do you know the meditation of transforming death, bardo, and rebirth into the three kayas? Or do you want to meditate on emptiness? Do you want to do the taking and giving meditation? You know, bottom line is taking refuge. But do you think you'll remember to take refuge? Especially if you're, you know, going to have a... You're one of those people, yeah, in that concert hall and wondering if they're going to shoot you. Will you remember to take refuge, or will your mind just go into total fear and panic? One of my very dear Dharma friends, who's, you know, practicing a long time, this was many years ago that this incident happened, but, you know, still he had practiced for a long time when it happened. And he was walking in Dharamsala in the marketplace, and he slipped and fell. Yeah, and he told me as he was falling, the thought in his mind was, oh shit. And then he realized, wow, what would happen if I were to die in a sudden way like that? And that was my thought right before I died. And that really kind of frightened him. Like, you know, I want to make sure that the thought before I die, if I'm dying in an accident or something like this, is not that kind of thought, but something much more dharmic. Okay, so, you know, maybe somebody can, tomorrow, can lead the community in a meditation on imagining your death. And, you know, and then go through it, do the meditation, discuss it afterwards. Yeah, maybe at your discussion time you can do this, meditation, and then yeah. Very, very useful. Very useful. Okay. So then, from there, the Lam Rim goes into the topic of, you know, we're dying, so what happens next? Yeah. So the Gomchen Lam Rim doesn't have a lot on this topic. Yeah. It says, reflecting on the way future lives will be, the joys and sufferings of the two kinds of rebirth. Thus, you will soon die. You have no time to stay. When this occurs, you will not cease to exist. But according to your karma, you will be propelled towards and born into one of the two kinds of rebirth. Either an upper, a fortunate rebirth, or an unfortunate rebirth. Okay. If you fall into a lower rebirth, the torments will be numerous and unbearable. Yeah? So contemplating these three outlines there, contemplating the sufferings of hell beings, where they experience great heat and cold, contemplating the suffering of the hungry ghosts who suffer from lack of food and drink, so from extreme hunger and thirst, and then from animals who suffer from stupidity and, you know, getting used and abused by others. So then it says, respectively, so in the hell realms, for a period of an intermediate length eon, And then they do the math. A human month being equivalent to a single day, 10,000 of its own years is the duration of a hungry ghost's life. Animals, too, may be tormented by suffering for as long as an eon. Yeah. Or we see insects, you know, don't have a very long lifespan, but yeah, if you have many insect rebirths, one right after the other, you're dying and being reborn again and again, which is no fun either. So if you cannot bear just the prick of a thorn, ask yourself what will happen when you face the lower realm's torments. Yeah? So those of us who love to complain, yeah, this hurts, that hurts, whatever, yeah, then compare what we're complaining about with the potential sufferings if we should have a lower rebirth. Yeah? So when you really, you know, think about this, you stop complaining. It makes your life so much easier. Yeah? Because we realize that the things that we moan and groan about are really quite tiny compared to, you know, what happens if we have a lower rebirth. So the purpose of meditating on, you know, being born in a lower rebirth is not to make us, you know, panicked and terrified and freaked out, but again, to give us, you know, to think of what the future could be, so that while we have the opportunity now to avoid creating the cause to have that kind of future, we use that opportunity. If we don't think about our next lives, if we don't think about the possibilities of having a horrible rebirth, then we just take our life for granted. We just go on creating all sorts of negativities without any contemplation of how they're going to ripen in our next life. And then that becomes a total disaster. Okay? So, you know, the purpose of this isn't, it's not to get you so freaked out that, you know, especially people who grew up in a religion where you were taught about heaven and hell as a kid, and you got really scared of hell because, you know, hell's presented as a punishment, and you're a bad kid, and you're going to hell, and, you know, it's not a very nice thing. So some people who grew up hearing that when they were little, then when they come to Buddhism, and they hear about hell realms, they say, well, that's the reason I left the religion I grew up in. I don't want to hear about this in Buddhism. Okay? So, you know, you have to realize that it's said to present, to give us information so that we can make a wise decision now about what kind of causes we want to create for what kind of future. Yeah. So don't go back to being a 5-year-old kid who's terrified of, you know, the devil who's going to get you, or, you know, burning in hell, or whatever. One of my Dharma friends also told me that, you know, because this stuff, when you hear it as a kid, it goes in on a very deep level sometimes. And it really takes you quite a while to bring it to the surface and to clear it out. And he was telling me that one man came to him and said, you know, I was born a Christian, I'm attracted to Buddhism, but I'm very afraid if as a Christian I become a Buddhist, then I'll go to Christian hell. You know, if I become a Buddhist, then I'll go to Buddhist hell. If I stay a Christian, I'll go to Christian hell. You know, and so the poor guy was really torn. And, you know, that kind of mentality is not the purpose of these meditations, to get you kind of freaked out like that. OK? Okay, but it's good to look and see what you were born with and the impact that kind of conditioning had on you, and to see if you need to do some work to decondition yourself. Okay. So I thought I would read a little bit from, Jinjuk, Bodhicharyavatara, Shantideva's text, entering the Bodhisattva's deeds, or engaging in the Bodhisattva's deeds. Because in chapter 2, before taking the Bodhisattva vows, he talks about prostrations, he talks about making offerings, and then he goes into this, there's some verses on taking refuge. And then from there, it goes into thinking about the karma we created, what kind of rebirth we could have, and the fact that, we're going to die. And Shantideva doesn't pull any punches. He just kind of says it as it is. So I thought I would read some of that because it's quite motivating. In this context, the context of Shantideva's text, he wants to motivate us to generate bodhicitta, and to practice. And of course, to do that, we have to refrain from all sorts of destructive actions. Okay, so chapter 2, verse 26, he says, I seek refuge in all the Buddhas until I possess the essence of awakening. I seek refuge in Dharma and in the assembly of Bodhisattvas. With folded hands, I beseech the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who possess great compassion and reside in all directions. So now some confession. Throughout beginningless cyclic existence in this life and others, unknowingly I committed transgressions and ordered them to be done by others. So maybe some transgressions unknowingly, but some knowingly, and some deliberately, and some rejoicing in them, and definitely asking some other people to do negative actions on our behalf. So overwhelmed by the deception of ignorance, I rejoiced in what was done. But now, seeing those mistakes from my heart, I confess them to the Buddhas. Whatever harmful acts of body, speech, and mind I have done in a disturbed mental state towards the three jewels of refuge, my parents, my spiritual masters, and others, and all the grave wrongs done by me, so thoroughly vile and polluted with an abundance of faults, I openly declare to the guides of the world. So he expresses especially negativities towards the three jewels of refuge, our parents, our spiritual mentors. Because those are people with whom the karma we create is especially powerful. In the case of our spiritual mentors and the three jewels of refuge, it's because of their good qualities. In the case of our parents, it's because of the kindness that they showed in giving us this precious human life. And when it says others, it can also refer to another group of people that we have especially strong karma, we create especially strong karma with. People who are poor, who are needy, who are suffering, who are sick. And they're a special field of merit too because of their pain. So we create especially strong merits with merit, either virtuous or non-virtuous, regarding these people. So I may well perish before all my transgressions have been purified. So please protect me in such a way as will swiftly and surely free me from them. Okay, so in the Lamrim, after we meditate on death, after we meditate on the possibility of having a lower realm, lower rebirth, then that leads us to the topic of refuge. Because having seen, having some idea of karma, like he's explaining here, and that we could very well have a horrible rebirth, then our natural feeling is, what do I do? Who can I go to for advice? Who can lead me out of this situation? Okay, so then that's why the topic of refuge comes, because we go to refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha to get the teachings for guidance and so forth. The untrustworthy Lord of Death waits not for things to be done or undone. Whether I am sick or healthy, this fleeting lifespan is unstable. So, you know, we always think, I'm going to die when I'm sick. We can die when we're healthy too. Yeah. Or we think, you know, I'll die once, you know, I complete such and such a project. No guarantee. Yeah. Could die before we do. Leaving all, I must depart alone. Okay. So this is like the last part in the 9-part death meditation, that we abandon our body, our friends and relatives, our possessions. We go on alone. Okay. Yet, through not having understood this, I committed various acts of wrongdoings for the sake of my friends and foes. So not thinking about death, not thinking about future life, yeah, just the vision of the appearance of this life being so strong, my mind exaggerated the importance of what was happening to me. And so I committed, I created a lot of destructive karma out of attachment to my friends and aversion to my foes. Yeah, because I didn't think of the long-term effect of my actions. Okay. My foes will become nothing. My friends will become nothing. I too will become nothing. Likewise, all will become nothing. So here he isn't being nihilistic, saying that after death there's nothing. But when you think about it, who we think we are right now is going to totally dissolve and will become nothing. And our friends that we were so attached to, that we clung on to, that we created, you know, so much karma in relationship to, they're going to die. Zero, gone, forever. Yeah, our friends who we hated, who we wanted to make suffer, also cease to exist. Yeah, they become nothing. And we ourselves, nothing. Yeah. So what in the world are we doing in this life? Yeah, I mean, this is the very important question. Like, what in the world are we doing? Is what we're doing matter? Does what we're doing matter? Does it make a difference? Yeah? Are we contributing to the welfare of sentient beings? Are we transforming our mind? Yeah? Because that's what's going to be useful at the time of death. Our possessions, our body, everything else, ooh, goodbye. Yeah? So you can spend your whole life working for something, and when you die, it's, you know, you're separated from it. Other people take it over. You have no control over how they use the thing that you spent your whole life working for and you thought was so precious. Yeah? So especially, you know, when people have a garage sale, sometimes they price things. And the prices are like ridiculous. They're charging so much for some little piece of junk. But that's because they're attached to that piece of junk and they think it's very valuable. But for the rest of us, their junk that they spent their lifetime collecting, in our eyes, is simply junk. You know? And why are they charging so much for it? So can you imagine people think of something that you think is so beautiful that you have, yeah, that you think is just gorgeous, and then somebody's going to take it, and you know, in their eyes, it's junk. Yeah, like, you know, you go through your life and you accumulate pieces of paper and trophies. And then when you die, what does your family do with all the diplomas and the trophies? What do you do with them? Yeah? Yeah? But it's so strange because I was talking to one man who came here. He was an only child. And, you know, so he got all this stuff from his parents. And he didn't want it. But he also felt like it was disrespectful to them to throw it away because it was stuff that was important to them. But for him, it's junk and he really didn't want to keep it. So he felt stuck in the middle of what do you do with this? I mean, I had a little taste of it. My parents, when my brother and I were young, this was before my sister was born, Russ was maybe, I don't know, a year and a half or two, and I was 4 and a half or 5, they had pictures taken of us. And they blew them up. They were the huge pictures, you know? I mean, at least 3 feet tall, in very big frames that were in their bedroom. Yeah? Because we represented the two things that were most precious to them. So they had big picture of me, big picture for us. Okay? So both my parents are gone now. Yeah? So I think that Russ will probably take his picture, and his kids may want his picture of when he was a little boy. Yeah. What are we going to do with my picture? Yeah. I'm 5 years old, my hair's like in two little, you know, pigtails here. Yeah. I don't want this picture. You know? Space right here or right there. Yeah? It's like, you know, it's not going to go with the Abbey. Yeah. My brother doesn't want it, I'm sure. I don't think my sister wants it. Nobody wants it.
Garage sale.
What?
Garage sale.
Garage sale. You think somebody's going to pay for a picture of me when I was 5 years? They might pay for the frame.
Yeah,
they
don't want the frame. They're trying to take a picture of it. Huh? It's just too big to scan. It's too big to scan. So have her take a picture of it and you can toss it out and just keep it digital.
But, you know, what do you do with this kind of thing? Which was, you know, your parents' precious possession. Yeah, that you don't want, but you can't quite throw it away. But nobody wants it. Yeah. Oh, you want it? So, yeah, I wonder if I threw it away, what my brother and sister would say.
Give it to your brother for his birthday.
His birthday was yesterday. Yeah. So right now my sister's still living in the house, so we don't have to decide quite yet what to do with it. But the time will come.
Store it downstairs and have a flood.
That's the best option yet. Or roll it in a tube and leave it for the cats to play with. Yeah? Okay. So that's a, you know, a big serious problem that you have to think about for a long time. Like what to do with that. Okay. Just like a dream experience, whatever things I enjoy will become a memory. Whatever has passed will not be seen again. Gone. Even within this brief life, many friends and foes have passed. But whatever unbearable wrongdoing I have committed for them remains ahead of me. Yeah, so for the people I'm attached to, I may have harmed people who harmed them. I may have talked behind the back of people who talked behind the back of the people I care for. I may have stolen or cheated other people to get things for my family. Yeah. And so meanwhile, all these people that I created the karma with respect to, they're gone. But the results of the karma are still in front of me that I have to experience. Thereby, though not having realized that I shall suddenly vanish, I committed so much wrong out of ignorance, lust, and hate. Remaining neither day nor night, life is always slipping away and never getting any longer. Why would death not come to one like me? Yeah? So this is, you know, right out of the first major point in the 9-point death meditation, that life is vanishing, no way to extend it. While I am lying in bed, although surrounded by my friends and relatives, the feeling of life being severed will be experienced by me alone. So I'll be aware that I'm dying and I'm, you know, the eye of this life is ceasing and I'm separating from everything. And meanwhile, my friends and relatives are going to be talking about whether to get pizza or Chinese takeout for lunch. Or they're going to be standing by the bedside crying. Well, I don't know. I don't think my family will do that. Yeah, anyway, I don't want them around. Huh? Yeah, they won't know. Good. You know, but like if I'm around and all you guys are there, you know? Are you when I'm dying, what are you going to be talking about? Are you going to be going, but, you know, where do you keep the property tax exemption papers? Because I have to take over after you die, you know? And, yeah, what do you want us to do with your ashes? Yeah, you want us to throw them on Sukhavat, you know, as a cavity? Yeah, what do you want us to do? And then, of course, you know, do I have to wake up early to go to your funeral? I'm so tired. I want to sleep in. When you die, can I sleep in and let other people plan your memorial service? I really don't want to have to act as an usher at your memorial service. You know, please, can I be excused? Yeah. Or somebody's going to be going, oh, my shoes are so ugly. They're so filthy from working in the forest. I need new shoes to go to your memorial service. Yeah. Will the Abbey get me some new shoes, please? Yeah. Is this what I'm going to be hearing when I'm dying?
For sure.
Yeah.
It's not rehearsed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's going to go, we need a picture for the Enu. Quick, go get the camera. Let's take a picture. Can we have a community picture with the Abbess dying?
Outside.
Yeah, your color looks better if it's outside. Please carry her outside. You know, gather around. Everybody smile. Yeah, smile. Children, smile. This is your last photo. Yeah, can we use it on the annual report too?
Right.
Yeah.
Is it at that point you'll part with your hush puppies?
I don't have hush puppies, do I?
Those shoes?
Yeah, that's right, Mary. Yeah, I'll part with them then. I'll bequeath them to you. Do you wear the same size as me? Yeah, you can have my hush puppies, and you know, who wants the Berkeys?
I want your forest jacket. Safety pins on it.
Oh, my forest shirt. Yes, that's all together with safety pins. Okay. Yeah, Venable, where is she right now? Yeah? She needs to sew it first here before you can have it. Oh, everything on my screen vanished. Okay, it's back. Yeah. So, I mean, what's going to be the story?
We're going to look at your advanced directive. Yeah. It has it all laid out.
Yeah?
And do as directed.
For once.
For once? Will you understand my advanced directive? I wonder. You're going to look at too many long sadhanas here. Can we do the short version? You know, like if I'm incapacitated, I'm dying, it takes a long time to die. You want somebody there doing your sadhanas, even though you can't do them. And you guys are going to say, oh, too many long sadhanas, you know. This is just, can I do the short version? Huh?
We're gonna need your password.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. When seized by the messengers of death, what benefit will friends and relatives offer? Zero. Zero. Because they're gonna be overwhelmed by their own grief and their attachment to us. It's going to be very difficult for them to help us at all. My merit alone shall protect me then, but upon that I have never relied. So we never put our energy into creating merit, and yet merit is our protector at the time we die. O protectors, I, so unconcerned, unaware of such terror as this, accumulated a great deal of negative karma for the sake of this transient life. That says it. Petrified is the person today being led to the torture chamber with a dry mouth and dreadful sunken eyes. His entire appearance is transfigured. What need to mention the tremendous despair when stricken with the disease of great panic, being clasped by the physical forms of the frightful messengers of death. So this happens to somebody who's not prepared, yeah, whose mind is unrestrained, who does not know how to try and meditate at the time of death, you know, so the afflictions just take control, and this is what happens. Who can afford me real protection from this great horror? With terrified, bulging eyes agape, I shall search in every direction for refuge. Upon seeing no refuge anywhere, I shall become completely enveloped in gloom. If there should be no protection there, then what shall I be able to do? Therefore, so seeing, you know, thinking of your future death and seeing what it's like to be without having practiced the Dharma. Yeah. Then it says, therefore, now I seek refuge in the Buddhas who protect the world, who strive to shelter all that lives, and with great strength eradicate all fear. So they eradicate all fear by teaching us the Dharma. Yeah. Likewise, I purely seek refuge in the Dharma which they have realized, that clears away the fears of cyclic existence, and also in the assembly of bodhisattvas. I, trembling with fear, offer myself to Samantabhadra, to Mandurghosa, also I make a gift of my body. To the protector Avalokiteshvara, who infallibly acts with compassion, I utter a mournful cry, please protect this miscreant. In my search for refuge, I cry from my heart, Vakashagarbha, Kashidigarbha, and all the compassionate protectors. And I seek refuge in Vajrapani, upon the sight of whom all harmful beings, such as the messengers of death, fell in terror, flee in terror in all directions. Previously I transgressed your advice, Buddha's advice, but now upon seeing this great fear, to you I go for refuge. By doing so, may this fear be swiftly cleared away. If I need to comply with a doctor's advice when frightened by a common illness, then how much more so when perpetually diseased by the manifold agitations of desire and so forth. And if all people living on this earth can be overcome by just one of these, and if no other medicine, if no other medicine to cure them is to be found elsewhere in the universe, then the intention not to act in accordance with the advice of the all-knowing physicians that can uproot every misery is extremely bewildered and worthy of scorn. Yeah? So if people living on this earth have nothing to protect them, and yet, and they're seeking some help, and yet they don't take to heart the advice of the Buddha, who's the all-knowing physician, you know, who can uproot all their misery, then that's really stupid, and that's worthy of scorn. If I need to be careful near a small ordinary precipice, then how much more so near the one of deep duration that drops for thousands of miles. It is inappropriate to enjoy myself thinking that today alone I shall not die, for inevitably the time will come when I shall become nothing. Who can grant me fearlessness? How can I surely be freed from this? If I shall inevitably become nothing, how can I relax and enjoy myself? What will remain with me now from the terminated experiences of the past? Yet through my great attachment to them, I have been going against my spiritual master's advice. Having departed from this life and from all my friends and relatives, if all alone I must go elsewhere, what is the use of having friends and enemies? Totally useless. Totally useless. Yeah. I think of these, you know, these people who, like, did the terrorist attack. And when I was reading about it, I was thinking, what do they think they're going to gain from doing this? Of what benefit is this? Yeah. What do they think they will gain from doing this kind of thing, you know? And clearly they have no idea of karma. Clearly they misunderstand their own religion, whatever it is. Yeah. And yet feeling powerful, inflicting harm on others, and creating a direct ticket for them to the hell realms for themselves. So what's the use? Yeah, and then to think, who knows what we did in previous lives when our minds were uncontrolled and overwhelmed by anger and suspicion and, you know, this kind of thing. Who knows what in the world we did? How can I surely be freed from unwholesomeness, the source of misery? Continuously, day and night, I should consider only this. Whatever has been done by me through ignorance and unknowing, be it the breaking of a precept or a deed by nature wrong, I humbly confess it all in the presence of the protectors, with folded hands prostrating myself again and again, my mind terrified by the misery to come. I beseech the guides of the world to please accept my transgressions and wrongs. Since these are not good, in the future I shall do them no more. That's the end of chapter 2. Okay? So that chapter, it ties together a number of different topics, you know? Kind of, we have this life, we're overwhelmed by the 8 worldly concerns, we're going to die, you know, at the time of death, our karma's going to ripen, and yet we didn't pay very much attention to what kind of karma we were creating during our life, because we were running around involved in the 8 worldly concerns. So we didn't think about the results of our actions. We just followed whatever impulse entered the mind. Yeah, and so in the name of helping our friends, friends and relatives, we created a lot of negative karma. In the name of preventing our enemies from harming ourselves or our friends and relatives, we also created a lot of negative karma. All those people we're separating from, they're all dying, we're dying, but the karma we created, we have to experience. And nobody else can take that from us. No matter how compassionate the Buddhas are, they can't take our karma away from us. They can teach us how to purify, and they have been teaching us that. But we just kind of said, mañana, you know, I'll do that later. What I did isn't so bad. I don't really need to purify. Okay? So we didn't purify, we didn't, you know, really put our energy into creating merit. And then at the time of death, there, you know, you can't press a rerun button and go back and do things differently. Yeah, so it's really a advice of caution from Shantideva that he's telling us out of compassion so that we can take steps now to live in a meaningful way so that at the time of death, you know, in our mind there isn't just total havoc in our mind. So we should listen quite well to what he's advising. So in the following chapter, you know, he goes into rejoicing and requesting teachings, requesting the Buddhas to remain, and then, taking the Bodhisattva precepts, generating bodhicitta and taking the Bodhisattva precepts as being the thing that is most worthwhile doing in our life, generating bodhicitta and living according to bodhicitta. Okay. So Shantideva speaks very directly to us, but it's all done with the intention of compassion, you know, to help us. Okay. Questions, comments?
I was just thinking last time also when you told that friends, relatives will not be of any help, and thinking like, you know, students also to prepare for that situation when your teacher is dying, because it's a special relationship and your teacher doesn't want to have or doesn't need a student around who is freaking out, you know.
Kind exactly, of, so, yeah.
To have that in mind, you know, to prepare for that again and again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And the worst thing you can do around somebody who's dying is be overwhelmed by your own emotions. And then the person who's dying feels like they have to take care of you when they're the ones who need to focus on their own experience. And if anything, we should be encouraging them to remember their spiritual teachers, to remember their Dharma practices, tell them what to think, tell them, guide them in practice. That's how best to benefit them. So you're right, thinking about that is very important preparation.
Someone asks, remembering death daily is difficult. How do we keep paying attention to the transience of our life?
What makes remembering death difficult?
We're distracted with other things.
Yeah, we're distracted with other things, such as?
Eight worldly concerns.
Imagine that. So what would be a good way to train yourself to remember death every day?
When you wake up in the morning, just say, today is a good day to die.
Yeah. So one idea is when you wake up in the morning, when you're generating your motivation for the day, to also remember, I could die today.
Thich Nhat Hanh has a gatha that's helpful. Waking up this morning, I'm glad to be alive. 24 brand new hours are before me. I vow to live my life fully, regenerate.
But that's assuming we have 24 hours in front of us.
It makes you aware that, you know, I'm glad to be alive. You're not just like, for me, it makes me realize,
yeah,
you know, I might not have been alive.
Right, yeah, yeah. I might have died. I'm glad to be alive. But, yeah. Who says a glance meditation? Do any of you say a glance meditation? Yeah? Is there a verse about recalling death in your glance meditation? How come nobody raised their hand and offered?
I put a stone in my pocket. I have my hands in my pockets a lot. So
okay.
That's one of, I need a physical cue to remember.
Okay, so you need a physical thing, so you put a stone in your pocket.
Yeah.
And then when your hand goes in your pocket.
Which is a lot during the course of the day.
Yeah, you remember to think about death.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, because you know the garden, like when the things come and go, even though they're not sentient, to watch the seasons and to watch the flowers and say, you know, you're going to look like that flower. I mean, they come, they cease, and then they die. They just sort of disintegrate. That's kind of the way it's going
to
be.
Okay, so paying attention to the seasons and what happens to the plants and the flowers. And the insects, you know, how things arise and cease, yeah, all the time. I find watching clouds, yeah, we have a lot of clouds here. Have you noticed how fast they've been going by? Yeah? They're just like our life.
Reading obituaries.
Yeah. Reading obituaries, yeah.
The prayer requests we get.
The prayer requests, yes, especially.
All situations.
Yeah, we get asked to do prayers for quite a variety of often amazing situations, you know, how people have died.
Also, too, Haroldina has a gas tank that doesn't have a gauge that works.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea about how the uncertainty of death is, I usually don't know how much gas is in that tank because the needle's broken. So I like using that as an analogy that I don't have a needle on my gas tank either. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay, so one of our tracks, one of its wonderful qualities is that the gas tank, the needle doesn't work. So you're never sure how much gas there's left in the tank and what you're going to be doing when all of a sudden Haroldina stalls in the middle of going up a hill in the forest. You know? And it's a good analogy for remembering the uncertainty of the time of death. And, you know, we'll always be in the middle of doing something when the gas runs out.
When I get upset, I like to think, do I want to die thinking this?
Yeah.
So it's a good training.
Yeah.
So it helps me to get out of that. It makes me think about it.
Very much. So when you get upset, you're at a point now where you can catch yourself when you're upset. and ask yourself, do I want to die with this kind of mental state? And that
helps.
That helps, doesn't
sometimes
it?
Sometimes the affliction's stronger than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't want to die with this kind of mental state. No way. So if we don't want to die with it, why do we live with it?
Someone online suggests putting pop-up reminders on your cell phone.
Pop-up reminders on your cell phone. Is coming for retreat from the Abbey. Yeah, at the Abbey. But unfortunately, they don't have enough time to come, do they? Yeah, they can't come this year. They have family obligations and things they need to do in the summer. And, you know, there's summer they have to fix the washing machine and grow the garden because their mother's coming to visit, and you know, and then you need to take the children somewhere, and you got to get up to the Abbey, so that's going to cost a little bit in transportation. So you know, you're saving your money for that Caribbean cruise. You don't have enough to come to the Abbey. Yeah. So somehow the priorities on the bucket list. Yeah. So maybe.
What'd you say? The phone's going to start ringing.
The phone's going to start ringing, okay. Yeah. But it's true. I mean, write down your bucket list, and if coming to do a retreat at the Abbey is one of the things, when you do the meditation tomorrow, imagining your own death, then imagine you're dying and you're looking at your bucket list and. No, you never came for retreat at the Abbey. Now you're too sick to travel. You can't go. Yeah, then? Yeah, and then think about, you know, how you spent that time, how you spent the money, what you did instead. Anything else from the folks online? That was it, huh? They were quiet after that.
They signed off.
Okay.
General generic messages about thank you, wonderful teaching, and how important it is to meditate on death.
Yeah. Okay, so the next topic is refuge. So we'll just start right now because we're almost out of time. Okay, so. You know, in the Gomchen Lamrim, then the next outline is relying on the method for happiness in future lives. Okay, so training and taking refuge and developing the faith of conviction in the objects of refuge and so on and so forth. Okay, so one of the we have to think of what are the causes of taking refuge. You know, what motivates us to take refuge? Because if we know that and we practice creating these causes, it'll make our refuge in the Three Jewels stronger. So one of them is having a sense of alarm about our possible lower rebirth. Okay? So that's why the topic of meditating on the unfortunate rebirth comes before taking refuge. Because when you consider that, you have a sense of alarm that then you're seeking, you know, okay, who can I rely on to lead me out of this? Where can I get teachings on how to transform my mind? Okay, so that kind of alarm is one cause for taking refuge. A second one is having confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to lead us out of that situation. So developing that confidence or that faith involves knowing the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. you know, what they are. So we'll get into that next week. Yeah. And then the third one is if you're taking Mahayana refuge for your practitioner, if you want to follow the Bodhisattva vehicle, then you want to take refuge with a sense of compassion for other living beings, going to the three jewels of refuge to help you so that you can help them, the other living beings, avoid an unfortunate rebirth and avoid the suffering of samsara in general. Okay? So at least two of those, you know, the alarm at the prospect of a lower rebirth and confidence in the Buddha Dharma Sangha to guide us, that's the minimum. And then if you want to follow the Bodhisattva vehicle, then with compassion for other living beings as well. Okay? And so if we know that those are the causes of taking refuge, then we can really do those meditations to create those causes, and which deepens our refuge. And when we have strong refuge, then we know like what our direction in life is and who we're depending on to lead us, you know, where we're going spiritually and who's going to lead us there. And that adds a great deal of clarity to our life instead of just being confused about what do I believe and, you know, who am I following and what really do I, you know, what do all these different spiritual paths offer? You know, kind of like you're a consumer of spirituality and, you know, what do you have to offer? Yeah. And then just having mass confusion about our own spiritual life. So when we create those causes for taking refuge, then our refuge is firm and stable, and that gives a lot of structure and direction to our lives. Okay? So, let's dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Gurana Mandala Kamdiratayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of
explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West Flourish.
And so let's dedicate for all the people who died in the world today, especially for the victims of the terrorist attacks. May they have good rebirths, meet the Dharma, practice it well, And similarly, may the perpetrators of the terrorist attacks have a sense of regret in their mind for their own destructive actions, and may in one life, if not this life, then in future lives, may they meet the Dharma and do strong purification. And may they take refuge in the Dharma and let themselves be guided to generate compassion for all living beings.